if you ask me, Austin, you know, Steve, what's the biggest misconception of dental service organizations that are out there? I believe that the biggest misconception is really that the patients aren't receiving the highest quality of care.
Welcome to the Real Estate Secrets Podcast. This show is about sharing lessons in commercial real estate that were learned from trial and error and working directly with CEOs of billion-dollar healthcare organizations. Our mission is to teach the insider strategies used by the big guys to everyday healthcare operators in order to get access to the best real estate at the best prices.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Secrets. I'm your host, Austin Hare, and our guest is Dr. Stephen Winfield. He is the president of Dental Well Practice Group. It's a DSO that owns and or manages 65 locations. And so really, Dr. Stephen Winfield, very much a pleasure to have you on the show today and looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's get to know you as a person. Like, you know, obviously now you're president of a DSO and maybe some people look at that and think, oh, you've arrived or you've made it. But, you know, there's a lot of work that went into that and there's a lot of different things that happened along the way. So I love like talking about the story ahead of time so people can, you know, pull out commonalities and hopefully get inspired. And so, you know, growing up, did you know that you wanted to be a dentist? Did you know, like, this was your life plan? I mean, what did that look like?
I grew up the son of a farmer and fireman. My mom was a teacher. Yeah. So I grew up in what you would call really a public servant kind of home with a fireman and a teacher. And so, no, I didn't know that I wanted to be a dentist. I can remember the night before I went to take the ACT, my father said to me, so where are you going to send your college, you know, these scores for your college entrance? And I was like, well, I guess I'll send them to the college because I wanted to be a policeman. So my dad was like, you know, maybe you should expand that. There's certainly nothing wrong with being public servants. My parents both were, but my dad was like, I think you can do more than just that. So how I got into it was my father was very much like, you can be more. We're proud of you. You have the ability to be more. Why don't you expand and look at something besides just being a policeman or a fireman or a teacher like my mom and dad were, and think bigger. So he sent me to see my family physician. He sent me to see my family dentist. And I think he even sent me to see a lawyer. And I spent a day or two with each one of them. And
wow. How old were you at this stage?
16. I was 16. I was a sophomore or junior in college when this was happening. And so he's like, just go spend a day or two with each one of them. So he were arranged for that to happen. And I did. And once I came back, I was like, you know, Dad, I think I want to be a dentist. They seem to not have to work holidays. They don't have to lie for a living. or lie on behalf of other people for a living.
Isn't it a requirement you have to either be into fishing or golf to be a dentist?
You know, perhaps it is. I'm probably not great at either one of those, so I'm exception to the rule in so many ways. But I landed on dentistry as sort of going into college. I knew what I wanted to do as I had been following these family physicians and dentists.
And it sounds like your dad was very influential on you growing up. So,
he was.
I mean, if you could think about the most important thing that you learned from him, I mean, what do you think that would be?
The value of hard work, the value of showing up, the value of being there. Those are so many things that we forget that, you know, this is not all easy. I mean, yes, I may be the president of 65 unit DSO, but, you know, if you ask me, what did I do last week? I probably went to three different dental offices. I may have filled in from somebody at the front desk to somebody who was taking the trash out at the end of the day. I still do those things. I'm still a servant leader. I am there. I'm in the field when we have, you know, so the value of hard work, the value of showing up, leading by example is definitely the things that I
like. And it sounds like humility too. I mean, not a lot of presidents would be taking out the trash.
I do it.
That's cool.
I do it.
That's really cool. Okay. So, you decided that you wanted to do this before you went into college?
I did. I knew going into dental school, I was going into college, I was pre-dentistry, of course, with the typical biology major, chemistry.
Okay. Major. And then in college, did you have anything entrepreneurial or even in high school, really, like anything entrepreneurial or anything that you did that kind of set you up for dentistry?
You know what? I'm going to admit to you that I went straight into the military. I still had this public servant mindset in my head. Because both my parents were public servants, a teacher and a fireman. So I had this public servant mentality in my brain that's like, oh, I'll go serve in the government as a naval dentist. So I went into the Navy right out of dental school. They paid for all my college. You know, it was an excellent, it was an excellent opportunity for me. I will tell you the moment that I figured out I wanted to be an entrepreneur, I was in Iraq with 2nd Marine Division. I guess this was, 2002? And somebody had sent, I don't know, people from here had sent books, like lots and lots of books. So we were like in the desert and all you could do is really read. Because 2002, we didn't have cell phones with internet and all that stuff. So I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that book,
very familiar.
Yeah, that book, as cliche as it sounds, changed my life. I read that book and I was like, you could apply this to dentistry. This would really, and I didn't even know what a DSO was. I mean, listen, I'm a country boy from Kentucky. I didn't know anything about being a business professional, nor did I know anything about scaling a business, or I didn't even know what the acronym KPI stood for. You know, I didn't go to business school. So I learned through the School of Hard Knocks. I read that book. And it was at that point I was like, you know, this could happen in dentistry. And I'm really intrigued by it. And once I figured that out, I knew I didn't want to be a career military person. I wanted to, you know, be closer to home, be closer to my family. So I started exploring group dental practices. And that's how I landed in a family-owned group dental practice where I found a business mentor. And when people ask me, hey, Steve, what changed your life the most? My business mentor absolutely changed my life the most. I put the work in. Now, listen, I showed up. I put the work in. But it was somebody who was willing that when I asked for the guidance and I asked for, you know, to be developed, that, you know, he was certainly willing to put me in the scenarios that allow for that to happen. So I'm very, very blessed and grateful.
No, that's awesome. I love the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, like you said, it is kind of cliche because a lot of people talk about it.
They do.
But, I mean, you know, he had such good principles in there. And it's like, you know, you can overdo it. Like, some of the things, be the laziest person in the room, be the dumbest person in the room. Like, you know, you don't, you got to actually work. Being lazy, it means like, you don't have to do everything, right? You can hire and outsource some things. But at the end of the day, you know, you're not going to be successful like working 4 hours a week. You know what I mean? Like, you still got to grind.
Right? Yeah, I think that there are some companies you can do that in, or at least it might be easier. But in the world that we live in, outsourcing certainly makes a lot of sense. But if you want to lead a company, to me, I feel like I need to know how to do every single piece of the business. I need to understand it inside and out. I need to understand it from the patient's perspective, from the employee's perspective. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he was like, you know, if you want to own a pizza shop, find the best pizza shop there is and go and work in it. You know, work in the back, learn how to make pizzas, find out what they're doing, find out where they're ordering stuff, find out how they've created their systems. Pay close attention to that. And that's really what I did, was I found a family-owned DSO. It wasn't a great big one, but I found a family-owned DSO that had not yet gone private equity. They had about 15 offices, big offices. We had 500 employees. And I started at the bottom. You know, I started as just an associate doctor. But I told the mentor, Dr. Johnston was his name, I told Dr. J, hey, listen, I want to be you someday. And he said, well, I'm 72. I'll teach you everything you want to know if you just will put in the work to do it. So that's how it happened for me, is that I did exactly what it said. If you want to, you know, own a pizza shop, go work in the best pizza shop. I wanted to own a dental group. I found the best one I could find with people who were willing to spend the time with me and mentor me. And it really paid off.
Wow, that's cool. And, you know, I think that's such a good point to talk about. And a lot of guests have said that on the podcast, is like, just the value of mentorship and the benefit, it continues to pay dividends when you have the courage to ask. Because I think a lot of people would love to be mentored, but they just simply don't have the courage to ask. And sure, there's a possibility that they'll say no, but I think a lot of times successful people like to impart their wisdom. You know, it makes them feel good.
They do. Well, and the other thing is that we have to have humility. We may ask for coaching, but you have to be coachable, right?
True.
You have to pretend, for me personally, I pretend like I knew nothing. You know, I know how to answer a phone, but let me pretend like I don't know how to answer a phone. So somebody who's an expert that is really, really great at doing conversions and answering the phone and putting patients on the schedule could teach us how to do it. I didn't go into it thinking I knew how to do everything. I pretended like I didn't know nothing, actually, or I didn't know anything, actually. And that's when I could learn everything, is when I thought I knew nothing, I could learn everything.
Is that a quote from Plato?
It's a quote from some book that I have read along the way. My phone is full of books, so it is a quote somewhere. When you act like you know nothing, you can learn everything.
Oh well, yeah, it's cool. So all right, so you're working at this DSO. You started at the bottom. You said as an associate.
I did.
Like, how did you work your way up as time went on?
Well, for the first year, Dr. Johnston told me, hey, you know, if you want to do this, you go in and got to show me you're an expert at being a dentist, right? Show me you're an expert at being the person who can convert treatment, who can diagnose treatment, that can talk to patients, that can talk to staff, that can lead a team on a small scale. And then, you know, that was a year of doing that. And in the interim, I really focused on developing skills that could help me increase the revenues of the practice and grow the practice. And I have found that those skills are orthodontics, taking out teeth, being able to place bone grafts, and doing root canals. Those are the things where I found if I spent my time learning how to do those three things, I already knew how to do a crown. I already knew how to do a filling. You know, I knew how to do the basics, but really learning to not be afraid to take out teeth and put in bone grafts, to not be afraid to do molar root canals, and to do Invisalign or orthodontics or fast braces or whatever you're into. Those three things will take you from being a $40,000 to a $50,000 a month producer to being a $100,000 a month producer. So, you know, that's where I worked really hard on my craft that first year. And leadership. I went through the Dale Carnegie Leadership Program, and that's one of the absolute best investments I ever made in myself. The team didn't pay for it, but I paid for it.
And did you, Dale Carnegie wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did.
And you, I'm guessing you read that then.
I did, yeah. That was the first book that Dr. Johnston actually gave me himself. I still have it upstairs. You know,
that's
he,
cool. So you're simultaneously working on your actual craft of dentistry while learning how to lead people at the same time.
Yeah, I was fortunate. The military, you know, particularly being a naval officer, they spent a lot of time in leadership development. So I had had a good bit of leadership development, but leading on in the military is quite different than leading in the outside of the military, right? In the military, you tell somebody, please go over there and do that. Well, they go and do it. They don't ever say no. You know, as long as you outrank them, they will always do what you ask them to do. Whereas, you know, influencing people in the civilian world is very much a challenge and has continued to become more and more challenging in dealing with different, you know, different age groups. And particularly me, I was, what, 29 when I came out of the military. I was young, you know, so it was very difficult to walk in and start leading people. So that's where I really learned the value of servant leadership and saying, hey, listen, you know, we want to get out on time. Everybody wants to get out on time. I'm actually happy to help you set up a system so we can do that. And then so by leading by examples, you know, partnering with them, it really made a difference to me. So my leadership skills and my craft combined those together. And then after the first year, Dr. Johnston came to me and said, hey, you know, I'm looking at our group as a whole, our 15 offices. And what we do not have across these 15 offices is a standard perio protocol, a standard hygiene protocol. You know, when he looked at the 15 offices, he's like, you know, our Douglasville office, they're really treating perio there. We're treating about 30% of the adults in that practice with some type of periodontal disease treatment, which is really the key performance indicator we want to shoot for. Whereas in the Lawrenceville offices, we're only treating 2% of the adult patients with perio. Why is there this discrepancy, and how can we get that as a real standard of care across our organization? So I worked with the doctor and leadership teams there to implement what we called a soft tissue management program, a comprehensive perio protocol. And that was sort of the first major leadership role that I took, was the implementation of that program, which changed our entire business, not just from the hygiene department, but it took our business. When I joined in 2004, they were doing right at $25 million a year. And then, you know, we sold that business 5.5 years later, late 2010. And we were doing $48.5 million, and we had only added one additional location. Yeah. But it wasn't just the perio that changed that. It was the hardest part of leading and being a dentist is you have to figure out that if you don't diagnose dentistry, it's not going to happen. You want to do more veneers? You better start, one, be an expert at it, get good at it, get trained at it. But two, then you have to start diagnosing it and treatment planning it. And what we found is when we got comprehensive in hygiene, and we started there, we're going to be comprehensive with every single hygiene patient. Well, then that trickled down. Then we started taking time to talk to patients about what it is that they want. Our patients got a higher dental IQ because they were seeing the hygienist on a more frequent basis. They also got a stronger relationship with a hygienist. And so really focusing our hygienist to become what we would call the nurse practitioner of the dental office, not just the cleaning lady that's cleaning the room and cleaning the teeth and cleaning the room and cleaning the teeth, but rather really looking at them in the role that they deserve to be in, which is with respect and as a true healthcare professional. That's when our business changed, because they began really selling the treatment on behalf of the doctor, being what we would call a treatment advocate.
What was your job title when you guys sold in 2010?
I was a regional professional director. I was the director of education. That's what I was going to get to next. So I started with that perio protocol. Then we didn't have really didn't have an advisory board of dentists who were advising the whole group and hygienists. So I became the director of education. So we set up quarterly meetings where we got everybody together, study clubs, where we're bringing cases in and reviewing them with all of our doctors and hygienists. And then that parlayed into having an annual, huge annual conference that we had all the vendors at, and all the dentists and their families came. It was really, really great. We built relationships. So our turnover was very, very low. And we were investing in the development of our providers. And so we were having quarterly study clubs. We were having monthly study clubs, quarterly meetings where we were getting everybody together, all the doctors together. And we were covering all day topics. So it may be veneers, it may be Invisalign. We actually did a implant continuum where we went through and kind of learned all the stuff about extractions and bone grafts and implants, and even got some of our general dentists placing implants, but particularly restoring them and doing a good job at restoring them so they would last a lifetime for patients if possible. You know, we really found that investing in the education of our doctors and the development of them was the thing that kept them there the most. And it helped make them financially successful, which ultimately we won on that as well. So it was a win-win.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, a ton of stuff that you learned in that, and really not a long period of time either. I mean, you said 5 or 6 years, yeah. And then 2010, you guys sell. And so what happens then?
Yeah, when we sold in 2010, I actually took a few months off. I took like 3 or 4 months off. I didn't do anything, nice. Which was weird for me.
Did you have some equity in that company?
I did. Yeah, when we sold, okay, cool. I did have equity in it. We did really well with that sale.
Do you want to talk about that at all? Like, was there any lessons that you learned? You obviously don't have to share specifics,
yeah,
but did
yeah.
you learn how to negotiate and then like the pros and cons of equity?
So I didn't negotiate the deal. I will say that we had a broker that negotiated the deal, and I wasn't a senior partner. I was a junior partner. So it was mostly the senior partners that were really involved in the transaction. We were those of us who were the junior partners, and I think there were 3 or 4 of us. We were really focused on making sure the business was still running and that things were going the way that it needed to go day to day with the operations. What I will tell you, this is the best advice I can give anybody that may be considering selling their business to, whether it's a private equity or to another DSO. We sold to another DSO. But anyone who's looking to do that, make sure that the values of the business that's buying you are aligned with the values of the business you're selling. Because the worst thing can happen, in my opinion, the very worst thing that can happen is we go through this transaction and it's a lot of money for them. Obviously, it's a lot of stress for us, the people who are being sold. And they're spending a lot of money to buy you. And the last thing you want to happen is that when this transaction happens, you find out that your values aren't aligned post-sale. You know, we were a people first company. That was Dr. Johnston was we're people first, then patients, then profit. Right. Those were his 3 P's: people first, then patients, then profit. And the company that we decided to sell to, they didn't have those same principles. You know, they were, let's say, profit first, then maybe patients, and then people were last. And you go from a company and you switch those all up, it simply doesn't work. So then what happens is everybody leaves that works there. The patients don't necessarily leave, but all the providers leave. Dentistry is a relationship business. People buy from people they know and they like and they trust. And when all the providers leave, then the patients start to leave because they're like, hey, the dentist is gone, the hygienist is gone, the assistant is gone, everybody's gone. Then I don't want to be here anymore. So that's why I think really doing your due diligence and making sure that as a dentist who's going to go through this, whether you're selling one practice or you're selling 10, or you're selling 40 or 50, you need to make sure the people that you're partnering with or you're selling to have the same values aligned that you do. Some things are going to always be different, but you want to make sure that they're not completely opposite of the way you're running your business, because it doesn't turn out well for either part. That's the best thing I learned.
That's cool. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's I think it's becoming more talked about, but like, you know, you said this was 2010. Yeah, it's one of those things I don't think it was talked about very much back then.
At all.
Culture was very abstract, and it wasn't a focal point, because like you mentioned KPIs, like culture is a hard thing to put on a KPI.
Well, I mean, so, you know, we measure it with net promoter scores. There's ways to do it now, but I wasn't as business savvy then as I am now, that's for sure. And man, the stuff I've learned from 2010 to 2021, you sure learn a lot once you're really, you know, knee deep in all this stuff and understanding, hey, listen, if a company's buying you and they don't even have a net promoter score for their employees, the E net promoter score, that could be a problem. You know, you might want to ask them to do that because you might be surprised.
Yeah. So, all right, you had sold what, and then just curious, what was that time off like for you?
I did a lot of traveling. I went to Europe. I, you know, hung out with my family. You know, hung out with my friends. I took it easy. I just didn't do anything for a while, for a month or so, because there was a lot of stress that led up to that transaction. And I stayed for about 90 days post sale, and then I left. And that wasn't part of the plan, but it was part of what I had to do for myself because my values did not align with, you know, what the values of the company that bought us. So, I did not have, because I wasn't a senior partner, I didn't have a 2-year buyout or a 2-year or 3-year stay or whatever. So I left.
Get it enough to take a couple months off and go travel.
Yeah, exactly. I took it easy for a while. And then I found a partner who had a very small DSO. He had 5 offices here in Atlanta, and he was really wanting to scale. And that's what I had helped, you know, Nanston do, is I had helped that company scale by putting in patient care flows, operational processes, working with the operations team to give doctors perspective on the feedback from that, those types of things. So I was ready to grow again, but I wanted to do it very slowly. So I found a dentist that owned 5 practices that really didn't have many operational systems and processes in place. And I, you know, started with just 1 practice, and then we went to 2, and then we eventually got 10 together. And you know, we began to scale that business and grow it substantially. You know,
That was
Trilongo. Yeah. So that business was called Trilongo, with Dr. Ken Trilongo, who's still one of my business partners and an awesome, great business person. He's just fantastic. And I learned a ton from him. We did that from January 2011 to 2018, at which point we kind of began the formation of Dental Well, where we bought Breakaway Practice, or partnered with Breakaway Practice and Dr. Scott Luna, and really began to scale and grow the solutions piece of our business and the learning piece of our business. Those were the things that, you know, when we looked at our practice group at Trilongo, we really didn't have the focus on membership or procurement, learning or solutions. So those are the things that we really got when we partnered with the Breakaway Practice, is we got those solutions and the learning and the membership piece of it, which really has helped us to scale that business.
Okay. And you went from, you said, how many locations when you started to when you finished?
Ken had 5 Dr. Trilongo had 5. When I started with him, and I still own several businesses with him that are even outside of Dental Well. We still sort of, being very entrepreneurial kind of company, we kind of cross-pollinate like that.
What was the name of that organization?
It's called Trilongo.
That was Trilongo. Trilongo. Okay. And with Trilongo, what was your real estate strategy?
Dr. Trilongo owns 3. He owned 3 of the 5. And he still owns those buildings, you know, because, again, he was small scale and he didn't really ever plan to grow large scale. That wasn't really his mindset. And one of the things I admired most about Dr. Trilongo is his discipline. He's very, very disciplined, where he would buy a practice. He would get it profitable. He would make sure it's growing and doing the things it needs to do. He owned the real estate in it. And it might be 2 or 3 years before he would buy another practice. It wasn't this fast acquisition where you're buying a practice every 2 or 3 months. That just wasn't what he was trying to do. He was really focused, I think, on building a long-term wealth and something that he could manage and work in and not want to grow, you know, grow to 500 practices. That wasn't really what he was doing. Is he was buying 1, bought the real estate. And in the first one that he bought, he actually bought a big building. So he had, I think he had a periodontist in there. He had a pediatric dentist in there. He had a CPA in there, you know. And so it's really been a very profitable long-term investment strategy for him. He still owns it.
That's great. Yeah, and we were talking earlier, you know, whether or not you buy or rent your real estate just depends on so many different things. And obviously, if you're growing really fast through acquisition, you know, you got to be really smart with your capital and how you're going to allocate it. And just oftentimes doesn't make sense to buy the real estate that's associated with it, because that's going to might slow you down.
Yeah.
But if you grow up slow in the right way, then all of a sudden you might be in a position where you can start to buy all the real estate of the practices that you're looking to operate.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, when you look at, let's just talk specific to Dental Well. When we bought or we partnered with Breakaway Practice, we were really putting all of our capital into that acquisition and then really defining and refining the solutions piece of our business, the learning piece of our business, and the membership piece of our business. And that takes a lot of money, time, energy, effort. So buying real estate wasn't really part of what we wanted to do with that capital. We wanted to get it focused on getting these technology pieces of our business built out and the infrastructure of our business funded without having to take, you know, private equity or dilute huge amounts of our ownership by taking on venture capital or private equity dollars. We didn't want to do that. So we were using the dividends from the practices not to buy real estate, but to rather invest in the infrastructure of the business first. But what I will predict is as we continue to acquire dental practices and we have the technology piece and the infrastructure for solutions, learning, and membership built, then you'll find our business is going to be one that as we continue to acquire additional practices, we'll likely acquire the real estate that comes with them. You know, it's just when do you pull the trigger to invest in those types of things is really a strategy. It's part of strategy for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So kind of explain, can you explain, I'm a little bit fuzzy on how you transitioned from Trilongo to Dental Well. Like, how did that come about?
Well, basically, Trilongo still exists. It's called T-Management now, but it still exists. And you know, I think that in that piece of the business, and it's no longer part of Dental Well at all. It's just Dr. Trilongo's little bitty piece of his business that he likes to run on his own. And I own a couple practices with him in there. But the way that Trilongo went into Dental Well is it really kind of became one. When we bought Breakaway Practice, Trilongo still exists inside of Dental Well. It's just got a different name, and that's really our transition company. It's called Transition Well, which is a brokerage firm, you know, similar to what an AFTCO might be. Some people, Henry Schein Transitions, it's a transition firm. It's now called Transition Well. That's where we've moved to that way. And so we, inside of that business, broker the sale of practices, whether mostly private practices, to other private practice dentists and or to other DSOs. So we still have that piece of the business. And then Dental Well came about because the David Lopez, who was really the brainchild behind this, he's not a dentist. Myself and Dr. Trilongo were the original owners of Trilongo, which eventually became Dental Well. And then we partnered with Dr. Scott Luna, who owned Breakaway Practice. And Breakaway Practice not only is a learning platform, that had a consulting wing to it and also had the call center, revenue cycle management, all those types of things that we need from a solutions perspective to run the business. That was already existing as part of Breakaway. And then the other piece that kind of came in to Dental Well was really Dental Fix, which is a mobile dental repair service. It's the fourth largest dental repair service in the United States right now. It's very, very scaling very quickly as well. So all of that came under what we named Dental Well. And Dental Well really, when we look at it, is a three-pronged company. One is solutions, where we have a marketing company that's generating lots and lots of leads. And then we partner with our phone schedulers. We have a scheduling piece of the business that's handling both online scheduling and phones. So we're answering phones and converting the appointments directly into the appointment book. And then we have the revenue cycle management piece of it, which is verifying insurance, which is, you know, controlling the billing, making sure that getting the patients in the door, giving them, you've got to give them great service, and then we'll make sure that the billing and the collections and stuff is taken care of. So that piece of solutions is there. And then, of course, the equipment repair is part of that as well. And then the second piece of Dental Well is learning, which is a huge part of making sure your practice is going and growing, is the CE credits, digital contents, and live events, both with Front Office Rocks. Laura Nelson is one of our partners, who's fantastic. And John Stamper actually just joined us to lead our learning pod. We call all of our units pods. And John is just well known in the dental space with his ability to put on, you know, world-class CE events. And then the third piece of it is really what we call our membership piece of it. And I always equate it kind of like Amazon. You know, are you a Prime member? So our membership really provides substantial savings on equipment, supplies, labs, and solutions. get access to special events, special discounts on solutions and learning. So those are really the three pieces of what DentalWell does. And then the piece of DentalWell that I run is our practice group. And our practice group is what most people would consider a DSO. And we own and or manage the offices that we manage. We only manage practices that we are going to eventually buy. So these are dentists that we've identified in areas or that I've identified that they want to be a partner with us. And we manage their practice for a period of time, and we have a contract then to buy it. So that's kind of what the practice group is. And so why does the practice group exist? Well, you're not going to find any other solution companies that are out there that are actually, one, being beta tested by true owners. I mean, we use our call center. We use our marketing company. We use our repair service. We use our procurement platform. So we don't have that. You know, most DSOs are going to have their own call center. They're going to have their own whatever the case is. We don't have that. Ours is all leveraged through DentalWell Solutions. We have about 1,550 private practice dentists who are members today, buying through our buying network, and who are getting substantial savings on all of the things that we've talked about today. And we have through, in terms of total number of customers, we have 19,000 private practice dentists who have used either one of our solutions, gone to our learning, or are part of our membership program. So we're touching a lot of private practice dentists and some small DSOs that are using this infrastructure so they don't have to recreate it themselves. So, you know, really they're outsourcing it to us.
That's cool. And obviously it kind of creates a good pool of dentists to examine for you to decide if you want to manage them. Exactly. And then when you're managing them, then you can decide, do you want to full on acquire them, right? So it's kind of like a funnel effect.
Yeah, it is. It is. And for us, it's really that opportunity that I mentioned that, you know, don't sell to the wrong person, because I'll tell you, it's as painful for the person who sold the business as it is for the person that bought the business. So, you know, it's not just a win for us, somebody that could eventually be acquiring a practice. It's certainly a win for the person who wants to sell. I mean, this is their blood, sweat, and tears. Some people, 20, 30, 40 years, they've built this practice and built this business and been a pillar in the community. To sell it to a group and then really regret it, not good.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, you know, it sounds like what you guys do really well is just make it seamless for the patient. Like, I know we were talking a little bit off camera about it before. What do you think is the main thing that you could really attribute the success to of DentalWell from a practice management standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about, you know, specifically if they're dentists watching this and they're like, what are you doing that's different? I think the biggest thing that we do well is we get patients in the chair, right? So the biggest limiting factor in any dental practice I see is really butts in the seats. If you got a patient in the chair and doctor, you do your job, which is diagnose, and you refined your skill set and you're not just wrapping these patients up and sending them out the door to your specialist every time they walk in the door, you've really, you know, you've got your skill set down, you're an expert at what it is you're doing, then really it's just a limit of how many butts are in the seats, cheeks in the seats, patients in the chair. Okay. That's what we need. And what DentalWell Solutions has done, and I think really it's what's helped us grow. When you look at our year-over-year growth, I took over running the practice group in 2018. When you look at what we have grown by almost 40% same-store growth in that time, how? Well, it is about patient flow and then retaining the patients we get. And that all happens through our marketing, our funnel of new patients that we're getting. Our DentalWell Solutions marketing is generating all these leads. And then it doesn't happen. What's that?
Is that mostly digital marketing?
It's a combination. We have a marketing expert that's assigned to each one of our practices. That's a DentalWell customer. It's not just because we're part of the practice group. It's what you get when you sign up. We're just a customer of DentalWell Solutions marketing. But, you know, I will tell you this, and we have an office in a very rural area in Virginia called Bridgewater, Virginia. In Bridgewater, Virginia, we don't have the same marketing concept as we do in Midtown Atlanta. Because, you know, Virginia, and this part of Virginia, it's very rural. So we spend more money on direct marketing and community outreach. We're in the community, it's going to health fairs. And you know, they help us, you know, design all the collateral and all the stuff to do that. So pay-per-click marketing just doesn't work as well in that region. Whereas in Midtown Atlanta, if you're doing direct mail, you may only be getting a, I don't know, 0.25% ROI on it. Whereas in Bridgewater, Virginia, we get a 10 to 15% ROI on or 10% response rate, I should say, on our direct mail. So, you know, the marketing is just specific to the area and what works in that area. But you asked me kind of what's made the difference. What's made the difference is that our marketing is generating the type of leads that we need. The phones are being answered every single time they ring by our scheduling team, the scheduling team at DentalWell, who are converting 85%+ of the calls that come in the door. The calls that come in, 85%+ is an appointment on the books. Sometimes multiple appointment on the books, but so they're trained to do that. Hey, you're coming in. Are you bringing your kids? Let's go ahead and get everybody scheduled. You know, their conversion rates are so, so high. And when we look at what happens in most dental practices, only about 40% of the phones are being answered and only about a 40% conversion rate. So you double that because we're answering 80 to 90% of the calls and about 85% of them are being converted to an appointment. That's how we're getting so many new patients. It's because of the way our funnel works, from marketing to phones, and then online scheduling too. We have real-time online scheduling, which our customers also get as part of the marketing. And then that also is filling seats. And then before the patients get there, our scheduling and revenue cycle management teams verifying all the insurance benefits. So we're able to make sure that we know what those patients need when they walk in the door. So we're able to very much start same-day treatment, be very focused on giving patients what they want. They don't want to come back. You know, they're there. If they need a filling, we're going to do it. If they need a crown, we're going to try to start it. If they need a scaling and root planing, we're going to take care of it. That's really what's changed our business is this flow. And then obviously maintaining those patients by having recall. And we use the scheduling team to do outbound calls, text messages, automated dialing to get people back on the books to get them scheduled. So
once you start managing somebody's location, like mm-hmm. what's the timeline like before you acquire them? Or maybe you either come to a decision one way or another, mm-hmm. maybe you don't acquire them, or if you do, but like how long does that take?
Well, really, we're looking more at the person. We're looking for regional partners, you know, fantastic dentists who may already have a practice or two in their region, and they want to scale. But you know, to scale on your own, to build out all the infrastructure to do it is millions and millions of dollars that you could be putting toward an asset that's going to grow your business. So when they partner with us, generally speaking, the majority of the time, we will be partners, partners for 6 months at least before we can make a decision. You know, sometimes 12 months, sometimes longer. It just depends on, you know, on the partner as well. Sometimes they want a little longer to see how it's going to go. But the majority of the time, you know, we're looking at some type of sort of dating period of at least 6 months where we're, you know, working together to make the practice be as successful as it can, getting them on our systems and processes so that when a transaction takes place, it's very seamless for both sides.
Yeah, and that's actually really quick. I mean, relatively quick.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know you got 50 or 60 under management right now. Mm-hmm. If you own like about 15 of those, so, I mean, you could theoretically really quickly have a bunch of locations 100% outright, right?
Right. Well, and then bear in mind, too, that we've been launching all of our capital to build out this DentalWell solutions and learning and membership I was telling you about. So at this point, we are now, we have ready, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, we have 6 or 7 under LOI that we'll have closed by the end of Q1. So we're ready to rock and roll now on putting money towards the practice group and expanding that. Particularly as private practice dentists are really looking for a place to partner. We're not looking to tell dentists how to be dentists. We think the dentist should already know how to be dentist. We're here to take the administrative burden off of them and to help provide them with the capital that they need to help grow their region.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you know, a lot of people think DSO and they have like a bad connotation and they think that it's not good for the patients. Talk about your feelings on that.
Yeah, I think if you ask me, Austin, you know, Steve, what's the biggest misconception of dental service organizations that are out there? I believe that the biggest misconception is really that the patients aren't receiving the highest quality of care. Because my experience, and I've consulted in many, many DSOs, not just worked in a few, but I've been a consultant in many of them. What I see is that the patients who are long-term patients of a quality DSO are getting as good or better quality of care than what they would get in a family dental practice. You know, example is perio. you know, a lot of general dentists are like, oh, all they do is diagnose perio in a DSO. Well, I'm looking at them going, well, why are you not diagnosing perio? If a patient has 4 and 5 millimeter probing dips and there's bleeding on probing, they have gum disease. It needs to be treated. You don't just watch it. What are you going to do? Watch it get worse and worse and worse? You know, because we have quality of care standards and we do patient audits and record audits, and you've got clinical leaders and doctors and hygienists whose only job is to make sure that the patients are receiving the highest quality of care possible. Somebody may look at that and go, oh, you're trying to overtreat. I'm going to argue and say, absolutely not. We're trying to ensure that patients are receiving the quality of care that they deserve to get, period. Now, you may call that overtreatment. I may say you're underdiagnosing. I mean, you know, the truth is I think that patients who go to a reputable dental service organization, managed or backed practice, are getting a higher quality of care, or at least as high of a quality of care, not less. That's my opinion. I think that's the biggest misconception.
And I mean, in a free market system, the lowering the cost of doing business by making purchases through economies of scale will eventually trickle its way down to the patient as well. So, I mean, it could also result in them spending less money.
It absolutely does, particularly when it's focused on preventative. I mean, you talk about the healthcare expense that's associated with patients that have heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and how tightly that is tied to their periodontal health, the health of their gum tissues. The medical expenditures on those patients who have their perio under control, it are hundreds of thousands of dollars over a lifetime, less than people who don't have their perio. So it is a trickle down. You're exactly right.
So where do you see DentalWell going in the next 5 years?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot of folks really begin to learn who DentalWell is. The last 2 to 3 years, DentalWell has really been, we've been focused on really figuring out who we are and who we want to be in the space. And who DentalWell has become is really, you know, we want to make dentistry easy and simple. You know, we want to simplify the solutions, the marketing, the repair, you know, the procurement of your supplies. We want to simplify your learning. We want to, you know, really give people a community that they can go to, particularly private practice dentists, so that we can simplify the business of dentistry. And so I think what's going to happen is you're going to find that DentalWell is going to become known as the place that has solutions that simplify the business of dentistry. And that word's going to get out. And I think you'll really see that our technology platform that's been built out called Orca is going to change the way that private practice dentists procure supplies, equipment, labs. And really, we are focused on customer service. That's the other thing that you're going to find is that DentalWell as a whole with our solutions, learning, and membership, we have a whole customer service team that is solely focused on making sure that our dentists who not only partner with us, but our dentists that leverage and use us are having an excellent experience and getting the value out of the membership. So I think that's where you'll see DentalWell go over the next 5 years is really become a known entity. We want to kind of be considered almost like an Amazon place you can go for anything.
I think you guys are definitely on track to do that. And then macroeconomically, you know, where do you see the economy going the next 5 years?
Oh man, that's not a trick question, right? It is, where is the economy going to go? Well, listen, you know, the ADA, I saw it today on my ADA report that was showing that, you know, the spend in 2021 in dentistry was down, you know, pretty substantially. And, you know, I think everything goes in ebb and flows. If you're a dental practice that is focused on providing what patients want, and I'll tell you what they want, they want to use their benefits, they want to use them before work, after work, and on Saturdays. It's just, they do. If you're a practice that's willing to provide care after hours or before hours, 7 a.m., 6 and 7 p.m., and on some Saturdays, I don't think you're going to really be affected by the economy as long as you are focused on giving patients what they want. That's what I think. And we've seen that over and over and over. When I joined Nanston in 2004, like I said, we were doing $25 million. Think what happened 2007, 2008, 2009, the biggest downturn in the economy, you know, since what, the Great Depression? We never lost any. We grew every single year, not by adding practices, but by becoming extremely focused on providing before work, after work, Saturday appointments, being very comprehensive with the patients that were there, giving them an excellent experience. We never went down. So, I mean, you know, what's going to happen? Inflation sucks. It's through the roof right now. You know, and you know, the hard part about where we are is many of us who live in insurance world, our fees are fixed. We can't raise our fees, right? So we've got to find ways to control costs while everything is going up, including people, including supplies, including labs. So, you know, leveraging, you know, a platform like the DentalWell membership, which is going to, you know, reduce supply costs for most private practice dentists between 30 and 40%. It's going to allow you to, you know, instead of paying $200 a unit for a crown, you may only be paying $40 a unit for a crown for the same type of monolithic Bruxer crown. You've got to find ways to save money. And that's really what we're here to help, is because we have so many dentists who buy through our network, we're able to negotiate prices that are substantially less expensive than the average private practice dentist can do. And even, you know, in my opinion, what most other buying groups can do.
That's cool. So if anybody likes what you're talking about and they want to reach out and, you know, learn more about DentalWell, what's a good resource for that?
Yeah, dentalwell.com. That's it. And then there's a button to the right that says Get Started. So just check us out at DentalWell. That's DentalWhale.com. Okay.
Cool. Well, I'll leave that in the show notes for everybody who's listening if they want to check it out. But I appreciate your time. And then anything that we didn't cover that you want to add?
No, I think we covered it all. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here and to give you my take on what's happening in the dental world.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Austin.
If you need help finding the perfect location for your practice, or you're ready to invest in commercial real estate, email us podcast@leadersre.com. That's podcast@leadersre.com. Or go to leadersre.com and fill out our form. See you next time.